He joins us from there. Hi, Mr. Burton.
Good morning.
I'm curious, what do you think was all on Paul Martin's list of human rights violations?
Well, I mean, you know, there's so many that could be on that list. Freedom of expression, you know, the lack of freedom of the press. Freedom of association, the Chinese people can't form their own organizations outside of the Chinese Communist Party. And lack of due process of law. We think that there are a number of people in Chinese prisons who shouldn't be there. And so, but there are many others, violations of labor rights, freedom of belief, the religious question is also there. So there are a lot of possibilities. There are a lot of areas in which China is falling short of its obligations to the United Nations Covenants on Human Rights.
And what kind of influence do you think Canada has in trying to get China to improve its human rights record?
Well, I think that the main improvements in China are going to come from within China. And certainly, as someone who lived in China in the 1970s as a student in the Mao era, it was a very, very repressive society, maybe comparable to what North Korea is today. And now things are indeed much, much better, but it's a matter of degrees. And China's economic progress has been staggering, but its political progress has lagged. But Canada does do things like support the legal aid centers in China and support non-governmental organizations, women's organizations, and we do present lists of cases of concern to the Chinese government and, you know, any number of things to try and do the right thing, as many other nations do, and show where Canadians stand on the human rights issue. But I think that given the size of China and the capacity of Canada to devote resources to promoting human rights in China, what we're doing is largely symbolic, but you hope it does make some difference.
Well, how activist can we be before we offend the great trading giant and they shut the door?
Well, I guess it's a matter of approach. I mean, certainly it's not prudent for us to give any indication that we feel that the Chinese Communist Party is not a good government for China, or that they shouldn't be they don't have legitimacy to be the government of that country. So I think that that's a line that we cannot cross. But aside from that, I think that a frank expression of our views of what should be Chinese government priorities in the human rights area is perfectly legitimate. And I think that the Chinese government is sort of inured to hearing this from foreign nations. And so whereas in the past they might have responded somewhat virulently to human rights criticisms, now they sit there quietly and you hope that they're listening.
Do you get any sign that there's any change going on in China? You say they're inured to the criticism, but do you see any chinks in the wall?
Well, certainly the Internet has been a great thing. There are apparently 94 million people in China who have Internet access, and the capacity of the regime to censor the Internet is spotty. And so there's a lot more information out there, and I think that the degree of debate allowed in China is much greater. And of course, nowadays so many Chinese people go abroad for study or for visits, and they have awareness of how things are in other countries, and that puts pressure on their regime to try and come more into compliance with the way things are done in the world in general, and to maintain those human rights norms that all nations should be held accountable to.
If you say that the Chinese don't pay a lot of attention to Canada, is there a country that they do pay attention to?
Well, certainly I think the U.S. gets a bigger hearing out of China because it's a very important market to China. And we have human rights dialogues with China, and I think that ours tend to be more pro forma than the U.S. ones, which occur maybe more sporadically. We have one regularly every year. They have them occasionally, but when they do have them, they tend to get the attention of higher-level Chinese officials, and I think what they discuss is really more pressing in terms of what China should be doing. And then there's also the United Nations process. The United Nations Human Rights Commission meets every year in Geneva, and the United States takes the lead every year in trying to encourage the international community to pass a resolution exposing Chinese human rights abuse. So the U.S. is really the major player in this, and the other countries are trying their best as well, but I think that in terms of whose telephone calls get answered, it's going to be the U.S. government's more than other nations.
And what's likely to happen to this list that Paul Martin delivers stipulating specific violations he wants addressed?
Well, we don't know. And, you know, you hope that someone's going to look into these things and give us some feedback, but the Canadian public will never know what happens to that list, and we also don't know what really went on in terms of the discussions of human rights between Mr. Martin and his Chinese counterparts. And so it may be that the thing will be put in a file and never acted on, but at least we've done the right thing by delivering a list and showing that we have cases of concern. And you hope that the Chinese government, because they want to have a reputation as a responsible member of the global community, will respond to these concerns.
Now, but just before you go, there are some who say that increased trade is what will bring improved human rights and bring China closer to some kind of democratic government. Are you one of those people?
Well, I don't see any direct evidence of a connection. Certainly, China's trade has expanded greatly in the past 10 years, and the human rights situation remains more or less the same. So I don't think that expanded foreign trade has had any direct impact on how the Chinese government treats its citizens domestically.
Well, Mr. Burton, thanks for your time on this morning.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's Charles Burton. He's a former economic...